This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to the In Focus podcast. I'm G. Sampath, the host for today's episode. After a gap of more than a year, the Nipah virus is back in Kerala. A day after a 12-year-old boy died of the infection in Kozhikode district, 11 more people have shown Nipah symptoms. A team from the National Center for Disease Control has been rushed to the state to help manage the outbreak. Kerala is already caught in a tough battle against COVID-19, with the state still accounting for around half of all new infections in the country. In this scenario, the outbreak of one more deadly viral infection has everyone worried. Also, this is the third outbreak of Nipah in Kerala, with the state having encountered the virus in 2018 and 2019. So how serious is the current outbreak? How prepared is Kerala to handle it? Will it remain localized or is it likely to spread further? To answer these questions and more, we have with us Jacob Koshi, Deputy Science Editor at The Hindu. Jacob, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Sampath. Great being here.
Jacob, to start with, how serious is the latest Nipah outbreak in Kerala?
Well, it's serious because the fatality associated with the Nipah virus is extremely high. So as we know from 2018, when there were nearly 18 to 19, it's disputable, confirmed cases, there were at least 17 confirmed deaths. So that is an incredibly high fatality rate for an infectious virus. And that alone is, it's the mere presence of a virus with such a frightening statistic that, you know, pulls up all our, barriers, you know, all our reservations and fears regarding it. Now, it is too early to compare it to the 2018 outbreak. For one, because so far there has been one confirmed death, and it appears that, you know, even though three or four of the family members of of the 12-year-old boy in Kozhikode, some of them have tested positive, are suspected cases. It has not been confirmed if they are actually harboring the infection. In fact, the latest figures also show that there have been about 8 samples. That includes the contacts of the boy, the families, then the various hospitals and the hospital healthcare workers, when they are all part of the contact tracing system. And some nearly 8 samples that were sent to the National Institute of Virology in Pune, they have all turned out negative so far. So, in that sense, we do not know. It does seem that, it is not as worrying as it was 2018. But that said, the entire trajectory of the Nipah outbreak in 2018 lasted nearly 2 months. It was May and June. And this, because the first confirmation of this case was only on Sunday, you need at least more than 4 weeks of absolutely zero cases and absolute confirmation that there are no positive cases at all to be entirely sure that, this is just like, for example, in 2019, when there was just one confirmed case. So yes, in terms of spread, it is still early. We do not know. The reassuring signs are that, so far, the contagion doesn't seem to have spread as rapidly as 2018. But the concern remains that it is Nipah virus. It is something that you cannot really be complacent about. And the fears still remain.
Okay. So you mentioned that it is, of course, extremely dangerous because of the high fatality rate. Now, we know a great deal about the coronavirus, which, of course, is like everybody's hobby to know as much as possible. But not so much is known about the Nipah virus, which we are told is a zoonotic virus. So what does it mean exactly and how does it spread? Is there a possibility of human-to-human transmission the same way the corona spreads?
Yes, there is a possibility. So a zoonotic disease basically only means that, it is a virus that is harbored in animals and it can spread from species to species of animals. In this case, the fruit bat, is one of the harbors of this particular genus of the virus. And from the fruit bat, it can spread to various other species. For example, in Malaysia, it first was found, it was known to have jumped from bats to paddocked pigs, and then from pigs, it went to pig breeders. And there was an outbreak that you know, that affected nearly 276 people. There have been, this was way back in 97, 98. Since 2001, there have been several such infections, you know, outbreaks that have been reported primarily in Bangladesh and the bordering district of Bangladesh and West Bengal, which is Nadia. So there have been reports, for example, where, you know, you've, I mean, this is what the suspected train, the chain is. There were no pigs involved in this time. But the fact that, you know, there are people who've been, you know, taking date palm, I mean, which is basically a juice from, you know, a particular fruit. I mean, if that palm has been contaminated by bat urine or, you know, bat saliva, and any person actually comes in contact with that particular fruit, it could spread to that person. And then from that person, it could travel via their respiratory droplets or, you know, being in any other person who's in contact with body fluids of that person. And that is how it spreads. Incidentally, in the case of the pigs, it was suspected that the bats would have eaten off some pieces of fruit. And those fruit, when consumed by the pigs, you know, in their pigsties, is how it would have, you know, jumped to that species. So this is the suspected train of transmission. And one interesting thing that has been noted about Nipah virus spreads is that, you know, it spreads very significantly in hospital settings. Again, if you remember, this is all very similar to how, you know, the early days of the coronavirus was. You know, you saw an extremely high spread in hospitals. And, you know, there were also the connotations with bats as being the harboring, as it being originating, and which were the intermediary species. So all of those narratives actually, you know, are very similar in terms of the Nipah virus too. But right now we are seeing this stage where, you know, it is suspected that it is not a very efficient transmitter, unlike, for instance, the coronavirus, because it requires, you know, fairly close contact. And this is something that that we see only, you know, in families of affected victims, or, you know, you see it in hospital settings, you know, where there are extremely lot of patients, you know, clustered together. And, you know, it very heavily depends on the quality of infection control in hospitals. In places where infection control is very good, you would see less of, you know, exchange of, you know, common syringes or common hospital, you know, hospital equipment. So you would see less of such spreads. Whereas, you know, in places where infection control isn't that strongly adhered to, you would see, you know, several more cases of spread. So these are the kind of common trends that we are seeing as far as the Nipah virus outbreak is concerned. From a biological perspective too, you know, there is a, I mean, it is still a virus. There is, this time there is no spike protein, for instance, that are involved, you know, that is involved, that, you know, makes its way into the body cells. So there is little information yet on, you know, on the actual modes of transmission yet. I mean, in a sense that is easily understandable to, you know, to all. But
isn't it true that, Jacob, isn't it true that the efficiency of transmission is inversely proportional to the mortality rate?
In one sense, yes, because from the common, from the assumption that if a virus is too lethal and it kills too many, it doesn't have many people to spread to. But then this is something that actually, the coronavirus has really appended, because initially it was thought that the coronavirus is something that that spreads very far and wide, and it is its lethality is relatively low. But over time, you know, you are seeing the role of various other variants. You are seeing that, the coronavirus actually has, long-term effects, in the sense that, you know, it can when dealing, when it affects the immunocompromised, or it affects people with compromised immunity, you know, it can cause all kinds of damages. I mean, in respect, it can cause damage to the respiratory system, to the circulatory system, to the digestive system, even neurological damage. And there are deaths that are associated with it. So yes, I mean, if you see it in the context of Ebola or the MERS virus, yes, we do not really see that kind of this relationship holds. But we never know when a virus can actually become more capable of spreading more easily airborne. That is, you know, it is able to, directly pass through the air across distances. And that itself will then, influence, trends and figures on its mortality. So this is something that, so in that sense, yes, the Nipah virus is still traditional in the sense that it has got high mortality and therefore it does not spread very easily. But this is something that, we shouldn't be taking for granted.
Right. Now, you just spoke about how the coronavirus affects the body of a person it has infected. So what does the Nipah virus do? Like, what are the symptoms? How do they progress? What happens to the body that has been infected by the Nipah virus?
So in general, what is the classical diagnosis that is associated with the Nipah virus is fever, delirium, then body pain, infections to the respiratory system. You know, many of the classical symptoms that you would, very extremely high fever, many of the symptoms that, that you would associate with, several other viral infections. And this is what, there is no real treatment prescribed or known for this virus. There is also not really, an immediate approved vaccine that is available. So all the care that is really prescribed for is treating the symptoms. That is, you try to get the fever down or you administer drugs that are known to be a little more effective with handling long-term confusion. In fact, there have also been cases where people have been reported cleared of the Nipah virus infection, but, have had long-term, for example, mental confusion or some kind of, neurological damage. The same ways that, we hear of long COVID, syndromes like that. So in that sense, the Nipah virus is still something which just basically very much like how the coronavirus affects the body, in the sense that the amount of virus that goes inside the body becomes at extremely high levels, and this triggers some kind of a cytokine storm. That is when the body's immune system, in a bid to clear out the virus, belatedly launches a very ferocious attack. And these chemicals that are released by the body, they actually end up harming, the body's internal systems. And that is what leads to a mirage range of complications. So there are these similarities, yes, but we still do not, there are no telltale signs, like, for instance, the loss of smell, that was so commonly associated with the early days of the coronavirus. So there is nothing so typical. There are no rashes or, telltale marks like a chickenpox or a measles, that we associate with this virus. It is just extremely high fever and, the lack of a diagnosis with any, when a blood test or any other kind of test shows that, nothing else works, it is probably supposed that, it is this virus. And then once you do a particular kind of an RT-PCR test or an antigen test, once you actually detect the telltale presence of the virus, that is when you really know that this is a Nipah virus related infection.
With the coronavirus, for example, we know that the lungs are a targeted area, and people usually get pneumonia and then they die. So is there any particular, does this virus to affect the lungs or any particular organ in particular?
In particular, no. But in general, all of these organs can be associated, because at the end of it, it is a disease that is that enters the body primarily, through the nasal tract and through bodily fluids. So, it goes through the nose or it goes through the mouth and, it enters the lungs first. So naturally, the lungs and respiratory illness is, remains the most, common area of infection. But depending on the severity of the disease and how effectively the virus manages to penetrate the lower recesses of the body, other organs can be affected. And, it is the ensuing cytokine storm that can sometimes result that, that actually aggravates the seriousness of the infection.
Okay. Now let's switch from the individual effects to the public health side of it. Now, Kerala's handling of the COVID pandemic has been widely debated, and it's in the middle of this battle. So how well equipped is the state to handle one more viral outbreak?
Well, if the viral outbreak were to become even half as or even a quarter as anything like this coronaviruses, then Kerala has a serious problem. Because I mean, or actually not Kerala, any other place has an extremely serious problem, because the strength of Kerala's public health, public response system is that it is able to, it knows what to do, in the sense that, you know, it knows that when a viral infection is, you know, is suspected, you do the basic things like immediately isolate the person, and, you know, you immediately find out all their immediate contacts and traces and you isolate them too, in the hope that, you know, all of these people do not continue to be spreaders and, you know, spread the virus further. That seems, that is actually very commonsensical, and it is not really rocket science, but it is in the implementation of this, and of course wearing masks and social distancing, etc. It is in the implementation of this that is very difficult. But this is the absolute absolute limits to what you know, what a public response system can do. Now, if an infection is so you know, is so lethal that, you know, it literally causes death, I mean, literally guarantees death upon being infected, that would mean that, you know, if many people were infected, they would all end up in hospital. And while Kerala has a fairly well spread out system of primary healthcare across, you know, all of its districts, there are serious limits to what it can handle. And if the number of patients reporting to hospital with you know, with the serious manifestations of illness are extremely high, then there would be a serious problem. And then all talk about, you know, Kerala's response system, etc., would, you know, would amount to nothing. The other thing is, because Kerala is, you know, is equipped, you know, has a system that is responsive to infectious diseases, it has got the capacity to, for example, you know, take blood samples, store them properly, and be able to send them to you know, requisite labs where they can be actually tested. Like, for example, in this case, the samples were taken to the NIV, has actually the National Institute of Virology, which is a biosafety level 4 lab and has been at the forefront of India's of, you know, isolating the virus, etc. I mean, they actually have a unit in Alappuzha in Kerala, but the ultimately the samples always are sent to the NIV Pune for confirmation, because it is only those grade of labs that that are permitted to actually isolate, you know, a virus as lethal as Nipah, and you know, actually handle them and, you know, test them accordingly. It's these are Kerala's strengths that, you know, that have been existing for a really long time, which now in the aftermath of the pandemic, many other states have also known, many other states now realize the importance, you know, of having such a system in place. So everybody, the coronavirus has ended up forcing many states to actually up the game on this aspect. But as we have just discussed that, you know, there really is no, you know, panacea kind of treatment for this. There is really no vaccine. You know, if these numbers for some reason were to suddenly balloon, it would be an unprecedented health crisis through which, you know, even our experience with the coronavirus would have only limited help, so to say.
So what are the chances of the Nipah infection spreading to other states? Should they be worried? Like, what is the probability? How would you assess that?
Given the fact that, you know, we already have the experience of something as contagious as the coronavirus, and we already know that, you know, how viruses can easily spread, there is already a system of border controls. There is already a system of, I mean, Tamil Nadu and, you know, bordering states of Kerala have also announced precautions against, you know, cross-border, you know, movements, which are already in place from corona, you know, because of the coronavirus pandemic. Then because of the, you know, the seriousness that the Nipah virus poses, Kerala health officials, as well as, you know, general health authorities in the state, to, you know, are particularly careful about, you know, confining patients and ensuring that, you know, they are not, you know, hanging around a lot, you know, at least until, you know, 21 or 28 days post-infection. So unlike, if, for example, in a previous, India is always seeing various kinds of outbreaks all the time. And, but, like, for example, the comparable one would be the H1N1 swine flu pandemic that, you know, keeps, you know, that keeps recurring. Now, that is a contagious disease in the sense that it can be airborne. So, but there were never really border controls enforced as strictly as it has been enforced in the case of coronavirus. So in those contexts, it can spread very easily. Then there is, but on the other hand, as of now, we do know that the virus really spreads only among extremely close contact via respiratory droplets. So that can be, that is some sign that, it may not be as contagious so far. Again, we never really know, because it's only once cases rise to a particular extent that, we can really understand better about the modes of transmission. So far, given the restraints that we have because of the coronavirus pandemic, I would imagine that most states would actually have some kind of, a movement control that probably would keep the contagion within Kerala itself, if at all there is actually a contagion, so to say.
Right. One final question, Jacob, before we wind up. Where do we stand in terms of getting a vaccine for Nipah infection? There were some reports recently that some vaccines are being tested with some success on certain primates.
Yeah.
So where exactly are we right now?
So that is one wee bit of good news regarding the Nipah virus, because till now, there have been many kinds of viruses. Virus candidates for the vaccine that have been tested in animal models. But only in 2020, last year, was the first a kind of virus that was isolated from a viral strain in Bangladesh. And a team in Australia, it's called Oro, is a pharmaceutical company. They have actually managed to isolate a strain that is closely related to the Nipah virus. I mean, it belongs to the same genus. And based on that, they have developed a vaccine that showed good results in animal models. And, they have actually progressed on to a phase one trial. The results of the phase one trial refers to an early trial in human beings. So results of that trial will be known apparently in October. So that is something that the world actually looks forward to, because it's performed well in primates. So the hope is that if it delivers the same kind of response in humans, we could see some kind of protection against this virus. But more interestingly is a very recent report that is from July. And this shows basically the team at Oxford and Oxford University and the National Institute of Health in the United States. They have managed to use the same backbone of the Covishield vaccine, what we call Covishield, basically the ChAdOx1 vaccine. They have been able to use that as a backbone and take a piece of protein from a strain of Nipah virus from Bangladesh, because that is a region where there are frequent outbreaks. And they've been able to use that protein and develop a kind of vaccine. And when they tested that in African green primates, green monkeys, which is basically a species of primates, they found excellent results even with a single dose. For example, a few monkeys that were tested, which were given the vaccine, and one group of monkeys which didn't get the vaccine, when both these groups were actually infected with the live virus, literally all of the unvaccinated monkeys turned extremely sick within 5 to 7 days and had to be euthanized, whereas none of the monkeys that got the vaccine required got a lot of protection from this vaccine, and none of them turned sick enough for them to go ahead. So this is extremely promising results, and given the kind of response in the world towards the coronavirus pandemic in terms of how quickly vaccines were developed and made available, that the sheer number of vaccine new kinds of vaccine platforms that came up, it would not be very difficult to imagine that there is now enough incentive globally, because once upon a time all of these were seen as tropical diseases affecting extremely poor countries, and pharma companies never really saw a great amount of incentive in investing in vaccines for such kind of tropical diseases. But now coronavirus really has changed all of those calculations, and there could be greater interest, in making vaccines like this. So I believe that, it is quite possible that you would have, potential vaccine candidates for something like Nipah virus and other related viruses, in the not too distant future.
Right. So yes, we do hope that Kerala would be able to move fast and contain the infection and the spread of the Nipah virus, especially because they've been following various protocols for the COVID-19 control measures, right? So those months and months of following this protocol should hopefully give them an advantage in terms of managing this.
But then the flip side of that is what we are seeing about the wave of infections in Kerala now. I mean the general consensus among experts seems to be that, you know, because Kerala contained the wave so effectively in the last year, a large fraction of the population was left uninfected, and because of which it is now because the contact tracing and restrictions in public movement are far from as restrictive as it was last year, because of which more and more people are getting infected. Of course, the big lesson remains, however, that while people continue to get infected, there are relatively fewer of them who are ending up in hospitalization and relatively fewer deaths compared to the number of people who are actually testing positive. So that is the only real sign. I mean, that shows a kind of positivity in that you keep your population, as much of a population free from the disease as till the time it takes for an effective vaccine to be available. So that really is a message from Kerala's approach towards infectious disease. And this is something that must be the template for every other place, because one cannot really control the contagion of a virus, because it's always in retrospect that we will know how contagious it is, what are the abilities it has to be able to spread extremely quickly or spread it. And the only real ways out of it is to protect itself from the disease aspects of the virus. And that really can be done only through vaccines. So every other state should be able to, whether it is Nipah, whether it is any other new virus, and zoonotic diseases are just bound to happen. And it is inevitable, given the kind of the climate crisis that we face, and the intrusion of people into animal animal habitats and the close interface that we kind of share with them, that is only increasing by the years. So this is going to be a kind of template for not only Kerala but for how all cities, villages everywhere in India must continue to adopt, because this is not going to be the last of what we're seeing, and this is something that we are going to be seeing all the time.
On this note, Jacob, we'll wind up. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and insights on this important issue here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.